Casey Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor or licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hale, author, natural health expert, producer.
Announcer, I'm T.C. Hale. I'm here with Kenna McEnroe, Will Schmidt. I'm not good at that at all.
Yeah, just stick to the natural health
care. Okay, I'll do my best.
Will Schmidt, hottie patati, is with us today, trainer extraordinaire to the stars.
Hi.
Will Schmidt.
Hello.
How you doing, Will?
It's warm.
It is warm. Will got a new car.
Yeah.
Now he makes me really, really want one.
Yeah, you should get one. Electric.
So today we're going to be talking more. We're going to be answering questions from Tony's blog, Ask Tony blog. So if you did ask a question and we answer your question, we'll let you know so you can listen to the podcast. But if you're not looking at the blogs or sending in questions to the blogs, then just join us on Facebook at Kick It in the Nuts. That's where we usually post all of our show topics. You guys can ask questions that you want covered, or you can even give us some ideas about future shows that you want to hear about.
Yeah, we might listen to that, but I don't have any questions today, so let's go right to other people's questions.
Okay.
I didn't bring any of my own.
All right. And let's just hope that we never figured out how to say this right. I don't know if I'm saying it right.
Oh, I don't know that.
Okay. All right. Sandy from Vancouver, British Columbia. I'm just going to say it the way I think it sounds like it. I have salicylate food sensitivities that developed when I started working around house cleaning chemicals 10 years ago. I try my best to keep low sal, but I can get symptoms when having too much acceptable foods, and of course, if there are a lot of chemicals in my day. Just started the 4-week digestive program. Could this help with my sensitivities? I also have low blood pressure, constipation, dizziness, frequent urination, urgent as well, varicose veins, leg cramps. From listening to insomnia and constipation podcasts, I do believe I'm anabolic. Did that baking soda morning test with no belching. Looking forward to the following program. Thank you for sharing all this knowledge. It might also be the answer to losing the last 15 pounds of my fat stuck on my belly. I went low-calf, no sugar, no grains 4 years ago, and I took up running and weights, TRX, in the last 3 years that has not helped with my belly fat. Thank you. I love the show. Informative and funny. LOL. Ken is the best.
Aww.
Oh, I added the last part.
Sandy. Yeah, Sandy. It sounds like you're listening to a different show.
Yeah, that wouldn't be this show, yeah. Sandy.
But it also sounds like Sandy looked at the full list of our shows and just said, I have all of these things that I'm dealing with. Each show topic is what I'm all about. So, Sandy, clearly there are some issues going on if you're dealing with that many, such a variety of, some of those are kind of severe symptoms. And, of course, you really have to look at your chemistry to know where you are. But, yeah, if you're dealing with constipation and you have to pee all the time, some of these symptoms do sound like you might be leaning to anabolic. But let's get to the sensitivity stuff. And could fixing your digestion fix these issues? And so let's look at some factors of digestion, because when somebody has these sensitivities and we'll see them to cleaning chemicals for a lot of people, we'll see them to wind or sun, and a lot of those can be caused by a huge variety of issues. I used to be horrible with cleaning chemicals
and our office wear perfume or anything.
Yeah, like our office was not allowed to be cleaned ever because it just had to be filthy because the cleaning chemicals just made me feel horrible.
So we did science experiments on all the bacteria that was in.
Yeah, we learned a lot, and it was fun.
It was for science.
But what was going on with me at that time is that I was very toxic still from all the drugs that the doctors had me on when I first lost my voice for years. And so it ended up that if I just even walked by some kind of cleaning chemical or just any kind of scent, really, it really hit me hard. And we see this a lot, and these types of sensitivities, when somebody is overly toxic and with digestive issues, why might someone be overly toxic, Will Schmidt?
Couple main reasons.
Yeah, let's look at a couple of them.
One of them is you don't sterilize your food when it comes in your body if it doesn't get that strong acid bath and then that strong alkaline bath from your stomach acid and your bile. So you get all these extra pathogens and microbes in your food that come into your body and then just set up camp and create all sorts of problems and toxins. So that's one reason. Another is your body uses your digestive system to expel waste out, like through the bile. It's one of the main pathways that the body detoxifies itself through. So if your bile is flow is impaired, you're not going to be excreting out those wastes the way that you should be. And then the third other main reason would be like if you're not digesting your food properly, then your body's going to be starving even if you're eating. And that can create a stress state, and that can create metabolic waste that build up and damage the cells and result in some of these sort of issues that she's dealing with, like varicose veins and like capillary leakage and cramping and dizziness and all these other issues.
Yeah, those are all signs of, and you do have some homework to listen to all of our episodes, because we have a whole episode on pretty much every one of those things that you just mentioned. But most of those things are signs of very low resources, not enough resources for the vein walls to strengthen or to function correctly, creating the varicose veins, not enough resources for signals to travel correctly, and you're having dizziness, not enough resources likely to create enough HCl so the stool can move through the system, and you're creating constipation, which could also be from the anabolic imbalance too. But usually when we see that, a lack of stomach acid has some type of factor in that. So when your main question is, I still have this sensitivity issue and I still have these extra 15 pounds that I can't get rid of. It says you went low calf, and that was clearly a typo, but I don't know if you meant low carb or low cal, as in low calorie. So if it's low calorie, just stop it. Just don't.
Mm-hmm. And if you're going to be listening to all the podcasts anyways, if you feel like transcribing any of them,
yeah,
go right ahead.
Go ahead and then just send that into us. And then we'll skip that one. But if you went low carb and you were able to lose a lot of weight that way, you might still have that extra 15 pounds of fat, because, you know, with a lot of people, when there's a lot of excess toxicity, the body needs to pull some of that toxicity out of the bloodstream and clear it out of the system, so that the balance of that blood does not go out of whack and the person dies. That's basically what can happen when the blood goes way out of whack. But the body doesn't allow that to happen, so it pulls junk out and it will store it in fat cells. The fat cells make it inert and it can be safe there. So in those cases, it doesn't really matter how well you're eating if you're still toxic. If the body doesn't have a good exit strategy to get rid of these toxins, then it's going to keep storing stuff in fat cells and you won't be able to lose that last weight.
Maybe she has a toxic friend named Kathy, and so she went low calf.
She went low calf. She limited her Kathy time.
Exactly.
Which could be beneficial.
We also see like she's probably in a stress state from all these issues, and with that you'll have elevated cortisol, which is pretty well documented to add to abdominal fat tissue growth.
Right, and also could be another burden on the body that removes the body's ability to remove some of these toxins.
Yeah, and when I say she's probably in a stress state, it's not just because she used 5 exclamation marks after on my belly. It's because like stress from like this cellular starvation, like when you don't have good digestion, you're not able to break your food down well, your cells don't have the things that they need to make energy.
If resources are low enough to be dizzy, your body is in a stress state because it's freaking out about the lack of stuff.
Yeah, and if she did this, the baking soda test where you drink water with baking soda and you don't belch, it shows you don't have stomach acid. So if you don't have stomach acid, you're not going to digest protein. You don't have protein, your thyroid's not going to run right, your endocrine system's not going to run right. So instead of running through thyroid hormone, you're going to run on stress hormones like cortisol and adrenaline.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of that test.
You don't like the test.
Exactly. Just because there are situations where drinking baking soda is going to make a person belch. But let's say, you know, like if there's a small amount of acid, like not enough to function, then that could create belching by those gases hitting each other. But if someone has zero acid whatsoever and the stomach's already completely alkaline from all the bacteria that's living in their stomach, They could drink baking soda and it's not going to change or create any kind of chemical reaction that could make them belch.
Well, that's what I like about, like, it should make you belch. Like, that's how it shows, like, it works. Like, when you do have acid and you drink it,
it creates that fizzle and action stuff.
So, if, you know, the faster you burp,
So you're saying that if you don't burp at all, then you don't have stomach acid at all. Okay, I kind of like that thing.
Yeah, no, so
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that test being one of our, what was that other chiropractor we really like?
Shankar
uses that. When I was really excited about, they have this, like, this remote control, like, pH radar tablet you can swallow, and it'll track the pH as you go through your stomach.
Oh, that's fun.
Duodenum. I showed you the link to that. I was like, we got to get one of these.
I remember that.
And Shankar's like, you can just do the baking soda test. Because, like, the faster you burp, it shows the more acidic your stomach is. She's not burping at all, so she doesn't really have any stomach.
Okay, I like that. Okay, yeah. I misunderstood
like
what you were saying.
Short and inner space.
Yeah, it's
right,
cool.
Right.
You want, but it's really cool if you ever want to get one of those. They have them in Germany. They're like $12,000.
Oh, okay,
right,
sure.
So we'll get that next week.
So anyway, like, because she's not burping at all, it shows she's not going to break down her protein, which means her thyroid's not going to be able to run right, which means the cells are not going to receive thyroid hormone, which means the cells are going to instead have to run off of stress hormones like adrenaline and cortisol, making energy in this alternate pattern that messes up everything else going on. So these varicose veins are directly connected to digestion in that chain of events.
Right. So don't look at fixing your digestion like it's going to be magic, Sandy, but you can see that a lot of these issues are created from the constipation, your body's inability to remove toxins, if there's a lack of bile flow, inability to remove hardly any toxins at all. So all of these things can come back to the issues that you're dealing with and can create improvement when you improve those issues. But don't look at it like just having the ability to properly break down food is going to magically fix all these things. But in a roundabout way, correcting all of these issues could allow a lot of these things to repair themselves.
And her main concern seems to be around these salicylate. I don't know how to pronounce this correctly either. And it's totally possible. Chemicals can be really bad and they could trigger all these problems. And it's also possible they just, like, tipped your system into an imbalance. And now, just like last episode, we talked about how, say, you got, like, an intestinal parasite and it messed up your digestion. And that eventually creates, a catabolic imbalance.
Right.
Or a low blood pressure imbalance.
And there are a lot of foods that contain those substances. And there's a lot of medications that contain them as well. And the reality is that those substances are probably not good for any of us at all. But the body is made to deal with a certain level of toxins. But if you are the captain of toxicity, every little thing that you put in your system is going to make your body freak out a little bit, because it's like, hey, I'm already at my max load. Don't put anything else in here that causes trouble. So if you can fix the system a little bit, you may find later on that some of those substances don't bother you as much. And that's what happened with me. You know, at my worst state, I could eat 3 or 4 different things and that was it. Anything else would completely wreck me for a week. But once my system was not so toxic, I was able to digest things correctly, then I could eat other stuff. I like other stuff.
Mm-hmm. All right, Ruth from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. I didn't get to hear your comments about thinning hair. I am in my 70s and would like to know if I can do something about this. Thank you for any information you can give to me. I would also like to know if my diabetes can be eradicated using your method of healthy choices. Thank you kindly for any help you can give to me. She is very polite.
Ruth is very kind.
She's a Southern Belle from Tennessee.
And she did say that she was 70, but most people that are named Ruth are more polite. That's just their policy.
Yeah.
So first of all, Ruth, we'll give you some homework because we have a whole episode on female hair loss where we talk about how in most cases it is a digestive issue because hair is made from protein. And if you can't break down protein, then your body can't rebuild things using the amino acids that proteins turn into. It could also be an overly catabolic thing. And those are the two issues that we see most common with females when they're having hair loss issues. So that'll be worth you listening to. As far as diabetes, it would depend on if you're a type 1 or type 2 diabetic. So which one are you, Ruth?
Ruth didn't answer.
Okay. Ruth is not on the line anymore?
Ruth has left the building.
We don't have a phone now.
Huh?
Yeah, we don't even.
Yeah, Ruth.
We didn't have her. I got confused. So Ruth, let's pretend that you're a type 1 diabetic. There are people out there that are having success nutritionally making changes with type 1 diabetics that seem to be helping them control their blood sugar levels and keeping them even without the big spikes and crashes, and giving them the ability to at least use less insulin to do that. And some have been able to remove that altogether. But we focus, especially in our book and in our fat loss course and stuff like that, we focus on helping more of the type 2 diabetic. So if you're a type 2 diabetic, and we're not saying that you can cure that, make sure you understand that's not what we're saying, but we have heard from a lot of type 2 diabetics that have been able to bring their blood sugar into range and either reduce or completely remove their need for medications, and they work that out with their doctor. We didn't tell them to do that. But the fact is that if you're eating all these starches and your body can't process them anyways, there really is no need to eat them. There is no necessary starch that you must eat like people might tell you. And we see a lot of success that when people fix their digestion so that they can process other types of foods, like fats and proteins and such, that they can reduce their need for those carbs and starches and then do okay and successfully bring down their blood sugar. Do you want to talk a little bit about how a lot of type 2 diabetics are having success with some fructose kind of stuff too?
Yeah, so it's an interesting thing that when we look at the cells and how they like to run and make energy, they like to be able to do it with glucose. They can use fats for energy, and that's one reason why we'll see diabetics have super high ketone levels. So if someone's in ketoacidosis, is a thing where your body's making all these ketones, which is like a energy substrate that it gets from fats, and it'll do that to get the cells an alternate form of energy if they're not able to use carbohydrate.
And that would be appropriate if you're a type 1 diabetic and that was happening.
Yeah, it's like your cells got to run on that. But if you're a type 2 diabetic, where if it's just for some reason there's something getting in the way of the mitochondria of the cells, like the energy, the engines of the cells, being able to use glucose and turn it into energy or ATP, if there's something blocking that capacity, then the cells are going to look for energy elsewhere, and so your body will get them ketones. So diabetics will make a ton of ketones, and it can be dangerous. It can be like life-threatening for their blood pH can drift too far, acid and ketoacidosis, and it can be a big problem. What we want to look at is like, why are the mitochondria having trouble being able to use glucose? And things can get in the way of them functioning right, like unsaturated fats, which are pretty much almost universally recommended as like, oh, these are the cure-all for everything. Right. And we had an episode a few weeks ago where we're like, maybe not so much. You know, mm-hmm. When we look at how they can impair the...
That was an episode on omega-3s, if you wanted to look that
up. Yeah, they can really get in the way of the cells using energy. So we'll see, like, unsaturated fats, especially for type 2 diabetics, are very counterproductive. And fructose is a type of sugar that's naturally found in like, fruit and manipulated in a bad way and made into high fructose corn syrup and some sodas. But naturally occurring fructose has actually been shown to be able to help get into the cells and get them the sugar that they need to run off of in this healthy way of cellular respiration, this healthy method of energy production. So fructose has actually been used to help cure type 2 diabetics with a conjunction of cutting out the unsaturated fats or really getting in the way of the cells.
From what other people say, we're not saying cure, because we don't like
sure,
to say cure.
We're not saying
but we're
cure.
Saying that other people have seen an amazing improvement to their
sure.
No longer have numbers that would go along with a type 2 diabetic.
Sure. Such as in the book, there is a cure for diabetes. Just
right.
Saying the
just
name
that
of that book that
right.
I'm looking at right,
right.
now,
right.
and the doctor
on
who,
my shelf.
Who I've met and spent time with in Arizona, has like a 99% success rate in people no longer having type 2 diabetes after doing this program. I'm not saying that there's a cure, but you know, I wouldn't.
There are people that are happier.
I wouldn't not say that.
Right.
You know.
So, because think about this, you know, a lot of type 2 diabetics have stronger sugar cravings than anybody, and it's because they're eating these carbs that's turned into sugar, and the body's inability to use them. So the body is thinking, hey, I didn't get any of that. I need more. So a lot of type 2 diabetics have the hardest time reducing the amount of starches and carbs that they're eating. But they're also just kind of giving their body a burden, since the body is not able to turn that type of food into fuel. So it seems that a lot of people see that with fruit, the actual fructose sugars are processed differently. A lot of that goes through the liver and doesn't need to process like a French fry or a baked potato might. So that can be one thing that could help a person reduce the amount of carbs they feel like they need to eat. If they're getting fuel from fructose from fruit, not only can that help the cells run correctly, but it can help them reduce their cravings for these other starches and stuff. We also see people fix their digestion so that they can use fats and proteins correctly, and then they can increase their fat intake and their protein intake, and the body can get fuel from those sources, and then that reduces those cravings even more. So when a person can reduce their need for all these carbs and just not eat them as much, and blood sugar can come down, then this huge sugar load is not keeping the insulin high all the time and making the cells resistant, and all this trouble seems to turn itself around a little bit once you can remove that burden. So these seem to be steps that help people do that, and we see them have success.
Yeah, and if you want to check out like kind of like a overview of what that would look like, a diet that's supportive of regular cellular energy production and that could potentially help with this issue, check out on our product website, Natural Selection Nutritionals, there's a free 10-lesson course, and lesson 6 talks about this like base meal plan that could give you a rough guide of like, oh, this is what it generally could look like. Of course, you've got to fix your own digestion and customize it to suit your own chemistry, but that's what we teach you how to do. Like when you go through that, there's a full 10-lesson course on that, naturalselectionnutritionals.com, or you can get started with that work also through the free digestive course at kickintothenuts.com.
All right, Jen from Fort Worth, Texas. Jen, do I know you? Because I lived, you know, in the DFW area for 6 years.
You know, Jen.
Probably. Since I've started cutting back on my carb intake, I have noticed an increasing craving for coffee. Seriously, I could be doing laundry or running errands and suddenly have a desperate coffee craving. Could I be cutting carbs too drastically and too quickly? I am increasing my saturated fat consumption, including adding coconut oil with a small amount of MCT oil a few times a day. I would want to know what she puts in her coffee. Like, if that's,
we look
like,
at Kenna. Look at Kenna. No one's.
I know. Like, really, if she's putting, like, cream or sugar, then that's what you're craving, not really.
So there
the
could
coffee.
Be a couple of factors here, too. But that's my first thing that I would want to at least get out of the way, is what were you putting in your coffee, even if it wasn't sugar, even if it was just something like a stevia or some type of sweetener that was sending a signal to the body saying, hey, when you drink this, sugar's coming in, and that's what you want to have. And so that could be one factor that could be causing the craving for coffee. Now, when it comes to the actual caffeine part of coffee and all those other factors, I think that Will and I look at this a little bit differently, and I have come around a little bit to looking at some benefits of caffeine. And there's a lot of other guys that I like a lot that talk about some benefits that I can kind of buy into. But one thing is, I've never done well on it at all. Like, I could drink coffee today and I'll be awake still on Tuesday. But another thing that I really don't like to see is that coffee is a diuretic. And if someone has really low resources and they're drinking a lot of coffee, they're going to be peeing out a lot more of those minerals too. But let's look at some of the other benefits at the cellular level that could be happening.
Would they want to be like, though, the coffee for energy, thinking that it's going to give them energy because they're depleted and they're like tired or something?
Well,
or?
I think that's something that Will's going to talk about. But one, you know, another viewpoint that I have seen a lot of research on is that there's a lot of people that believe that caffeine is not actually supplying any form of energy whatsoever. It's causing your body to steal from your reserves in an urgent state to supply it immediately. And that's why a lot of people need another coffee 3 hours later. Not, but let's listen to some of the other factors that could be beneficial that maybe she's missing and making her crave the coffee as well.
Yeah, I mean, it could also be similar to how people start craving carbs when they stop smoking cigarettes.
Yeah.
So this is kind of the opposite thing. Instead of the carbs, she's going to caffeine. And both caffeine and cigarettes both raise your blood pressure. So do carbs. So a lot of times when people stop smoking, they're like, I can't stop eating muffins. Because it's helping keep their blood pressure up, like that blood sugar.
Such a great point.
You know? So she's doing the other thing. She's cutting out carbs. Like, what else can I use to keep my blood pressure up? Coffee is one of those things. Maybe she knows, like, cigarettes are evil. So she's making a better choice. So I think a craving for coffee could come from this low blood pressure issue.
And because I think that the coffee, it gives that an extra constriction, right? Where it's raising the thing. But then if it's causing too much diuretic effect, the long term could be the blood pressure is lowering even more. So it could be this, raise blood pressure, lower blood pressure.
That's why she's got to keep doing it.
Right.
Keep drinking.
Right.
Just don't stop. You know. But no, yeah, so it does have these other things of like, it does cause you to pee out more water. So if you're already dehydrated, that can be a problem. It can be a temporary fix for pushing your blood pressure up. There's a lot of arguable points of benefits of how caffeine works at a cellular level. And it speeds the rate at which your mitochondria are using glucose. So in that way, like problems of like diabetics, that could be really helpful in, you know, in accelerating the ability of the cells to use glucose for energy. But if you're already someone who's like low blood pressure and a faster oxidizer and electrolyte deplete, the problem can come of like burning through the bit of resources that you are there. It's arguable that that caffeine works similar to like thyroid hormone. If you kind of put it in that context, thyroid hormone, not a bad thing, you know, very important. But caffeine is like accelerate. It's like if you were to put a supercharger on your car, right? If you're already low on gas, that's a problem, right? So a lot of times these people doing like the bulletproof coffee thing, like they're waking up in this fasted state where they're really depleted, they don't have any glucose available, and then they drink this like strong coffee and fats, and their stress hormone levels will be really high throughout the day, and they'll get leaner because you're in this state of using fat for energy, which is arguably good. Like if you got a photo shoot coming up, this is arguably bad also for a lot of other reasons related to elevated stress hormones all the time. So if she's in this state of like elevated cortisol and adrenaline just for a long time, that can create problems. So that's why I'm not a huge fan of like the bulletproof diet. And it's good to put that in context though of like with caffeine, how it can push a person even further into that stress hormone profile if you don't have carbs to burn with it. If you're putting putting in like milk or something that has milk sugar in it, then it can give your cells something to run off of. So there's been studies with like rats that were given thyroid hormone or caffeine, their metabolism increases. So these nutrient depletion diseases will hit them sooner because they're burning through their nutrients faster. But if they're supplied with adequate like sugar to run on or fuel protein to run on, then they don't run into those nutrient deficiency problems.
Right. So, okay, let's talk about one more factor with coffee before we move on. And if you've listened to any of our shows, you've probably heard us talk about a catabolic and an anabolic imbalance where at the cellular level, someone may be pushed too far in one direction. It's causing all kinds of problems. And coffee seems to be one of those things that for some people, it can be very pro-anabolic, and for others, it can be very pro-catabolic. And it seems to be that larger amounts of coffee tend to end up being more pro-catabolic, where smaller amounts of coffee tend to be more pro-anabolic. But even that can vary from person to person. It's just one of those things that can be completely opposite from one person to another. So if she has some type of severe imbalance in one direction, and that coffee was helping her balance that out before, that could be another reason why she might end up craving it as well.
Yeah, again, if you put it in the same category, it's not the same thing as thyroid hormone, but if you look at it in the same context of thyroid hormone, like underactive thyroid, that could lead to catabolic problems, right? Where the cells aren't able to make energy right, so all these stress hormones get elevated.
Sure.
That's a catabolic state. But then a hyperactive thyroid could also lead to a catabolic state because you burn through all your resources and now you're like,
body's going to say, let's make more resources by breaking down this tissue.
Right. So same thing with caffeine. Okay. Like if this mitochondria are like understimulated, caffeine can function like a vitamin to help them do their job. And that can actually like help cellular respiration occur and can stop some problems that can come along with impaired cellular respiration. But too much of it could do the same thing as like an overactive thyroid.
Right. So the moral of the story is about coffee and caffeine is,
It depends. Right. Depends on.
Coffee also goes hand in hand with poop. You know, if you need to poop, just drink some coffee.
I just thought of anyone walking down the street with a cup of coffee in one hand.
Exactly. I mean, that's, you know, hand in morning hand. Cup of coffee. And that's the
case. That's the case for a lot of people. But for a lot of people, we know that it can make them worse too. So it depends on what the issue of your constipation is.
I'm gonna. Kidding.
I know that you want something to be the same for everybody.
I do. I want something to be the same for everybody. Okay, Celeste. She's just from home.
I'm home right now, so this is from home.
While self-treating acid reflux with hiatal hernia and probable SIBO infection and reading through your info and listening to your podcast, two questions come to mind. Is the protocol for SIBO and H. pylori the same? And do I take my preferred herbal antibiotic while still taking a probiotic? Will the herbal antibiotic simply kill the probiotic? I could go on, but I will stop there. Thanks.
That's the limit of what you can ask until you tell us where home you're from.
Is. Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff to talk about here a little bit. First of all, is the protocol for SIBO and H. pylori the same? And not necessarily, but in most cases, let's say that you have some type of small intestinal bacteria overgrowth. That's what SIBO stands for. In most cases, you have more than one type of bacteria in there, and that it's moved from the stomach down into the intestines or up from the colon up into the small intestines. But in a lot of cases, if you have some type of infection, most people will also have like H. pylori infection in there as well. It's just the most common type of infection in there. So there are some of the protocols that are used for H. pylori that can work well for other types of bacteria as well, but it's definitely not the same. It's not interchangeable in every regard, because with H. pylori, a lot of what you're doing is going to wipe out things in the stomach, as to where with SIBO, you're looking to make reactions in the small intestine to clear out the infection that way. So I wouldn't say that they're interchangeable or hand in hand, but they could cross over. And with H. pylori, a lot of people use different things on that. If you go to kickitinthenuts.com and just search for H. pylori, you'll find a post where we list like it's 6 or 7 different things that we use with clients. Not we don't use all of them, but we interchange them, and maybe they'll use 3 or 4 of them at a time. And because H. pylori is hard to wipe out.
Yeah, it's annoying. And another thing, we had an episode. Do we have a full episode on SIBO?
The one with Dr. Ruscio talked a lot about SIBO.
With Dr. Michael Ruscio. That was great. And one of the things we pointed out, and he pointed out in that episode, was SIBO has a lot to do with motility, like having stuff move through your digestive system at the right pace. So when we think about like, oh, how important stomach acid and bile is in controlling the pace of digestion, we can look at that as like the main thing you need to focus on in correcting SIBO. It's like, get it so the system is flowing right and the system has the right chemical balance.
Running water doesn't grow all their junk and stuff.
Yeah, like running water and sterilized foods to like sterilize by your own stomach acid and by your bile, moving through you at the right pace, like it's going to be way less of an issue of the SIBO. So I would say like focus on the chain of events in the right order is really important. So doing massage techniques to help correct, and maybe even seeing a chiropractor to help correct the hiatal hernia is a big priority. And it's going to be really hard to really fix the reflux from occurring if you have H. pylori, because they're going to screw up the chemical reaction that should trigger the valves of the stomach to seal shut.
Right.
So you first got to get that thing in the right place. So doing the massage techniques or a chiropractic adjustment to help push it in the right place. Then focusing on doing the H. pylori protocol and rebuilding your stomach acid. And that alone might be enough to like resolve the SIBO by consequence, you know.
Right.
And there, if not, then go on to further SIBO.
Right. So if you feel like you have to use some type of antibiotic or herbal antibiotic, you know, our initial thought for many years was that there's no need to take probiotic if you're taking antibiotic. You're just wiping everything out. It's like throwing children into a volcano. There's no point in that. So that was our point. But I have heard from a lot of people who will sort of, towards the end of the cycle of whatever my antimicrobial or herbal antibiotic, whatever it is that they're using, towards the end of that cycle, they'll start to introduce some different strands of probiotics so that you can start to re-implant beneficial bacteria so that you're not just wiping out everything and then when you stop, some other bad guy gets in there and sets up camp and kind of takes over. So they kind of feel like you should at least start the probiotics towards the end of this treatment so that you're at least implanting the good guys first. And I'm kind of okay with that. I feel okay with that.
Tell me this.
Okay.
Okay, are parasites and bacteria, I mean, is that the same thing, or is it the parasite considered something completely different, or the parasite is a bacteria, but a different kind of bacteria, well, or...
Technically, even medically, a baby is a parasite.
I know.
So it really depends on its relationship to you. Is it a symbiotic relationship?
Sucking the life out of you?
Right.
Yeah, or a... And I don't, what's the opposite of symbiotic? I forget.
Unsymbiotic.
I don't probiotic. No. Or an antibiotic. It's just like, is it contributing to you? Because some flora make vitamins and break your food down further and kill off other. That's not a parasite. That's a welcome guest.
If it's
guest.
Sucking
it's
a team player. Things it's a team. Off of you.
Yeah, if it's like eating your resources and like that, you know, and you don't benefit from its excrement, then that's a parasite. Yeah,
yeah, and so they probably won't look the same in most cases.
Yeah. Oh, I've seen.
We'll do microscope stuff later.
Stuff on like Discovery Channel, where
right, like that looks like an alien,
and it came out of them.
Got worms
and
it's so gross.
That's creepy. So I think we answered all the questions for Celeste there. She could have gone on and on, but I think we handled what she did anyway. So good luck, Celeste, and let us know how it goes. And remember to always focus on. The basic, make sure digestion is working correctly first, because even if you take care of any infection, if you haven't fixed digestion, just more bad guys are going to come right in.
If you'd like to learn how to become a health coach or even just dig into more advanced teachings for yourself or your family, go to healthprocourse.com to learn about Tony and Will's course for coaches.
We made that course.
Uh-huh. Registration for this course only opens to the public for about a week at a time, so be sure to register for the coach newsletter so you'll be notified when the next registration
opens. Or you'll be left out.
That's right. You'll find more info at healthprocourse.com.
Man, I help. I help at those announcements.
You do.
I'm beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Along with some other choice words.
Yeah.
Ah. Okay, so for all of our Kick It Naturally listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook. Download with a free 30-day
trial. I feel like I could have said that better.
You could have saved it. So you can check out their service. That was instant karma for me. Just go to kickitinthenuts.com/or/ whatever you want to call it, audiobook, to find the link.
Okay.
Are we done with all the Ask Tony questions?
Okay. I think we got okay.
Here I go again. If you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the free 4-week digestion course at kickitinthenuts.com. Okay. You can get that book too on audible.com, and then you don't have to read it. You can just get Kick Your Fat in the Nuts and you can listen to it if you're lazy like me.
Yeah, good job.
Yeah. And then also head on over to Will Schmidt's MyBodyOfKnowledge.net and you can see some really cute pictures of Will too on there, I bet. And some good blogs and exercises as well.
Bye-bye.